So it's very wonderful to be back at Radha Gopinath Temple. Thank you very much for coming. And Srila Prabhupada would often say, thank you very much for participating in this Krishna consciousness movement. Whether you've been here for a long time or a short time or a first time, you are very fortunate, all of you. So we've all had our first time in Krishna consciousness. And I'll tell a little bit about my first time in Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada. I had come as a photographer, as you heard, getting a master's degree in photography. And actually my first professional assignment in New York was to cover the devotees. I didn't meet Srila Prabhupada first. I met his expansion in the form of his Krishna consciousness movement. And when I first met the devotees, I liked everything about everything. The prasadam, the smells, the incense, the books, the kindness of the devotees, everything. It was like coming home, although I didn't realize it at the time. And slowly, slowly I was becoming attracted more and more to Krishna consciousness. So I came in the summer of, the winter of 1970, December 1970, to Surat, India. And I met Srila Prabhupada there. I showed him two magazine articles that I had done and that were published about the devotees, one in New York and New Vrindavan, and also one in Los Angeles. And he appreciated it very much. He asked me at the time, are you going to become a devotee? And I said, no. Because I could not imagine shaving and wearing the robes. But in my heart, I was actually very, very much attracted. And Srila Prabhupada knew that. But he said after he heard no, he said, then you cannot stay. So I had just come expecting to travel with the devotees, and I didn't know what to make of that. I didn't say anything else, and Srila Prabhupada didn't either, and I stayed for 2 months traveling with the devotees. So that was a very interesting lesson, because sometimes Prabhupada would speak for the short term, and sometimes he'd speak for the long term, and sometimes for both. Obviously, that wasn't short term. I didn't have to leave immediately. And he very kindly encouraged me over the next few months in my service, taking photographs. We were sending those photographs back to BTG, and they were publishing them. They were very excited to have a traveling photographer with the group. And so Vishakha Devi, my wife, came later. She was not so attracted to Krishna consciousness. In fact, she was an atheist. Prabhupada asked her one time, how did you become a devotee since you were an atheist before? So her answer was, it is by your mercy, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's answer was, no, it was by Krishna's mercy. So we know it is both. It is both by the mercy of Guru and Krishna that we're given a chance to participate. So she came to see me, and she wanted to do a photographic essay on an Indian village. So we asked Prabhupada, where should we go to do that? So Prabhupada said, wherever you go, you will get your cameras stolen and they will cheat you. And then he said, you should go to Vrindavan. So we went to Vrindavan. First of all, we went to Nepal and then Vrindavan. And that's where she became Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada knew exactly how to, you know, handle every individual, no matter what their consciousness was. That's where she became a devotee, living in the holy dham. So I kind of forgot about my master's degree and stayed 2.5 years in India. My professors were wondering, what has happened to John? And we served here in Juhu, the very beginning. I was actually with Srila Prabhupada in his room when Mr. N entered the room and offered the Juhu property. And the next day we went out to see it in the taxi cab, Srila Prabhupada, myself, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, and Tamal Krishna, Prabhu at that time. And Prabhupada immediately wanted that land. And nobody else really wanted it because we were living downtown in a very beautiful, nice, clean apartment overlooking the Arabian Sea. And there were all kinds of preaching downtown Mumbai, making life members. But Prabhupada immediately moved us out to Juhu because he had his desire. And nobody could really understand it at that time. But we were happily serving him in Juhu for about a year and a half. And then we were called back to America to do our first film on Hare Krishna movement. And that was called Hare Krishna People. So anyway, during our service in India at the time, Prabhupada crisscrossed India many, many times with the devotees in those early months. And at every stop, when the train would stop, all the devotees would rush out and jump on the platform and have Harinam, Sankirtan. And then hundreds of people would gather around the Harinam party. So very quickly, all over India, the whole of India very quickly found out about the presence of the devotees. And it was an astounding time. If you just imagine the history of India with the Muslim invaders for 800 years trying out and out to smash the Vedic culture. And then we have the British came after them in a more subtle way, tried to undermine the Vedic culture. And then a few decades later, the Vaishnavas arrived. So the impact on that, Prabhupada's first devotees coming back to India was just tremendous. And then soon after that arrival, some months later, the first very big Cross Maidan Pandal happened here in Mumbai. We've all probably seen photos and pictures of that. And that's where, of course, Radhanath Swami was asked to come on stage by Srila Prabhupada and sit next to him at that first big pandal. And after that, there was the Delhi pandal in November of 1971. It was amazing. Only after a few months in India, these huge, huge pandals where tens and thousands of people were coming every night was going on. Somehow the devotees managed to organize these huge events. It was really all by the potency of Srila Prabhupada, and also because we were following his instructions to our best of our ability. And that's where the potency comes through. When the spiritual master is qualified, and also the disciples are trying to follow his instructions, that's when the potency comes. So the potency was incredible in those early days. I'll speak a little bit more about this factor of potency. I'd like to read some excerpts tonight of a paper written by Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. It hasn't been published, but it was just approved yesterday by the GBC to be published. So after the Delhi Pandal, Srila Prabhupada very kindly took us to Vrindavan. And that was the first time Prabhupada had returned to Vrindavan with a large group of devotees. He had come in 1967 with Kirtanananda Swami, but this was the first time a large group had come. And the residents of Vrindavan were so proud of Srila Prabhupada because, of course, we know he lived there for many, many years. And he knew many, many of the residents of Vrindavan. So when he arrived back, that had a tremendous impact on the residents. Everyone was so happy to see Srila Prabhupada return. And also he let his mission be known to quite a few. Before he left, he wanted to make devotees in the West, make the Westerners Krishna conscious, and then bring them back to India so that the Indians would also rethink their own culture and maybe take more seriously becoming Krishna conscious. Sometimes we think that Prabhupada was not very successful in his preaching in the early days in India before he came to America. But actually, Prabhupada was very successful in the sense that he contacted many, many of the high class, upper class persons in India. In fact, you know, the president of India at the time, and many big industrialists and educators. Prabhupada took his books to the universities. So when we came back, actually, we realized that Srila Prabhupada knew many, many of these very influential persons, and they gave us support. They became life members, and they help us to organize these very big preaching events in the big cities in India. So it was a very incredible time. And Srila Prabhupada personally walked the streets of Vrindavan with us, going from different temples. And he would take us in the temples and explain some of the history. And it was a very amazing time. One of the most wonderful memories I have of Srila Prabhupada at any time during my time with him was that he was in Vrindavan at an engagement at a temple. I forget the temple, but it had it was like a courtyard, and you could see up through the iron grating to the sky. And Srila Prabhupada was singing Jai Radha Madhava, and he was looking up through that grating into the sky. It just seemed like he was, you know, seeing something very wonderful up there. And I'll never know what that was, but just Prabhupada's intensity, singing Jai Radha Madhava and looking up through that grating was incredible. So these kinds of moments are hard to describe. More of a feeling and emotion. Many times Srila Prabhupada was in kirtan and exhibiting that same intensity of trance, you can say, meditating on his Lord. So Srila Prabhupada actually performed a wedding. He performed our wedding in Vrindavan at that time. And there was another couple. They were also to be married at the same time, but their history was not so pukka, you can say. So Srila Prabhupada did an interesting thing. He had the priest perform their fire sacrifice first, and their marriage was performed. Usually it was simultaneous marriages we've seen in the early years. And then Srila Prabhupada performed our marriage ceremony. I'm sorry, the priest performed our marriage ceremony, and Srila Prabhupada at that time came out of his room and sat on the Vyasasan. So it was an interesting way of indicating giving his blessings, actually. I'm sure he gave his blessings to the other couple, but it wasn't such a good arrangement. The man had run off with another devotee lady. And so anyway, we won't get into details, but Prabhupada very kindly did marry them, and he arranged it in such a way that he indicated that he wasn't so pleased with that arrangement, but he married them anyway. So Srila Prabhupada, we stayed about 10 days in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada spoke told us very cautious, to be very cautious in the holy dham, and not to commit any offense, because that offense is magnified actually 1,000 times. So I know that you're all going to Vrindavan very soon. In those days, I was probably the oldest devotee, one of the oldest devotees. I was 27 years old. So you can imagine the immaturity of our early days in India. But because Srila Prabhupada was there, he was our elder. We had no elders in the movement. Most of the devotees were age 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, but I was 27. So we were quite immature, and we committed a lot of offenses, as opposed to the devotees today, the congregation from Radha Gopinath Temple. You've all been steeped in the Vedic culture from your very upbringing, But however, we were exposed to all kinds of horrible things in our upbringing. So you're very, very fortunate to be in the position you're in. Srila Prabhupada was giving a darshan on the front porch of the Denver Temple in 1975. He looked out at all of us and he said, "You are very fortunate." And then he looked again and he said, "Now don't become unfortunate." Because the tendency for conditioned souls is to retreat back into material life, especially those who have been conditioned from the very beginning in the culture of sense gratification, as we find in the West. Unfortunately, that culture is spreading very rapidly all over the world. So please remain vigilant in your determination and your vows. Prabhupada many times wrote us, if you simply follow my instructions as I have given to you, chant 16 rounds, follow the four principles, then you'll for sure go back home, back to Godhead at the end of this life. So the assurance is there. It is just up to us to be very cautious. So I'd like to read some sections of this wonderful paper by Rabindranath Prabhu. One thing is emphasis of Srila Prabhupada's position as founder acharya. It sounds, that there's not much to be understood from that. Prabhupada's the founder and he's also the acharya. But sometimes with the disappearance of the physical manifestation of a great acharya, these things become lost. Actually, during Srila Prabhupada's time, and due to our own immaturity and young age, there were a lot of difficulties in the beginning. And one was the minimization of the position of the spiritual master. That happened in Los Angeles in 1970. And the devotees were minimizing Srila Prabhupada's position. And then a few months later, after they were chastised in different ways, they were overestimating the position of the spiritual master and actually calling him Bhagavan. You may know this history. So that seems to be an incredible leap of bad philosophy. How is that possible? But actually, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna that he's speaking Bhagavad Gita again to reestablish the disciplic succession. So if 5,000 years ago the disciplic succession could be broken, what to speak of today in Kali Yuga? So the lesson is that we have to be very vigilant in preserving our philosophy as it is and not deviate at all. So Rabindranath Swarup Prabhu, he says there are many consequences when Srila Prabhupada's position as founder acharya is realized. And among them, generation after generation will be enabled to receive the special mercy offered by Srila Prabhupada. The path back to Godhead he opened will become ever increasingly traveled. So Prabhupada came and he opened up the path. He showed us the path and he gave directions how to follow that path back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. And that is the business of all of us, to get out. This is not a place for a gentleman or a lady. There's uncertainty at every step, correct? We don't know what's going to happen next. I just heard from Krishnanand Prabhu. He was at Rath Yatra, you may have known, and a coconut was thrown from the Rath cart and hit his heel, and he immediately fell to the ground. And there was 2 months of recuperation. Is he here? He's somewhere. So we never know what's going to happen to us. This is a place of great uncertainty. So Srila Prabhupada, by his compassion, came and opened and showed us the path and is guiding us on that path back to home, back to Godhead. Another consequence of realizing Srila Prabhupada's position as founder Acharya is by taking full shelter of Prabhupada as Siksha Guru in his instructions or his Vani manifestations. All teachers in ISKCON on various levels of advancement will be able to authentically convey or pass on Srila Prabhupada's real teaching, thus giving proper guidance, shelter, and protection to all. Also, Srila Prabhupada's active presence will secure the unity and integrity of ISKCON. And number four, ISKCON's teachings will remain consistent over space and time. Five, Srila Prabhupada's realized knowledge, endowing him with a specific potency to spread Krishna consciousness, will not only be preserved, but also developed. And number six, his books will remain central to us, for they contain insights and directions that await future development to be realized. And we can, he also discusses, Rabindra Sri discusses the similarities between the founder acharyas of the Iron Age, in other words, the four acharyas of the different sampradayas, and the acharya of the Gaudiya mission are clear, in spite of obvious differences. In case of the four sampradaya acharyas, the inaugural divine revelations that took place in prehistoric time, the inaugural divine revelations took place in prehistoric time through Lord Brahma. In the case of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, however, the divine disclosure provided by Lord Chaitanya occurred within relatively recent historical time. Yet the original prehistoric teachers, who were graced with direct enlightenment by the Lord, had their Gaudiya analog or similarity in the six Goswamis. The parallel between enlightenment of the six Goswamis by Lord Chaitanya and that of Chaturmukya Brahma by Lord Krishna was clear to Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And he quotes in Madhya Lila 19.1, "Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge. In exactly the same way, the Lord, being anxious to revive the Vrindavan pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. By this potency, Srila Rupa Goswami could revive the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, activities almost lost to memory. In this way, he spread the Krishna consciousness movement throughout the world." And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself acted analogously to the four founder acharyas by reviving and reforming a weakened tradition. So we understand that after Lord Chaitanya appeared, his movement declined rapidly. Up until the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who systematically again presented his teachings. In other words, he put the teachings intact again. And then his son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, took on the task of disseminating or spreading those teachings throughout India. And then when those teachings were somewhat restricted because of the not following properly the orders of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada took up the mission again in the West and gave himself the title Founder Acharya. But it wasn't that he was establishing a new sampradaya. It was that he was reestablishing the Gaudiya teachings and the Gaudiya sampradaya. So the four Sampradaya Acharyas powerfully countered impersonal monism, restored the true theistic Siddhanta of the Vedas, and spread that Siddhanta vigorously throughout India. So did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Moreover, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had been concentrating his resources on going even further to propagate Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, the ultimate synthesis of the teachings of the four Sampradaya Acharyas throughout the entire planet. However, following the loss of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's physical presence, his institution unfortunately also suffered the immensely greater loss of his spiritual presence. As a result, the Gaudiya Mission became deprived of the power to be an extension of the center of the bestowal of grace for the benefit of souls in all parts of the world. So we were discussing how if we don't follow the instructions of the spiritual master, we lose our spiritual potency. So this is what happened in the case of the Gaudiya Mission. They neglected some very important instructions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and they lost the potency to spread Krishna consciousness all over the planet, although that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's wish. So Srila Prabhupada took up again, following perfectly the orders of his spiritual master, he became the recipient of Lord Krishna's grace and was able to do miracles. So he goes on to say, consequently, the servant of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in order to carry out the order of his master, in order to continue his mission as the enactor of his desire and fulfiller of his aspiration, that servant, our Srila Prabhupada, became the founder of Charya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He will remain actively present among us, generation after succeeding generation, so long as we remain his unwavering servants in all conditions, as he himself showed us by his own resplendent example. It's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada's establishment of Krishna consciousness in the West followed a similar parallel of the establishment of the Gaudiya Mission. And Rabindranath Prabhu comments, in the long and varied course of fulfilling his master's divine order, Srila Prabhupada carefully modeled his own creative efforts on the paradigm established by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur with the Gaudiya Math in the 1920s and 30s. That adventurous course was marked by such milestones as the 1944 appearance of the English language Back to Godhead magazine, the publication of the three-volume first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in 1962 and 1965, the 1966 founding of ISKCON in New York City, the establishment of the movement in England and Germany in 1969, and the restoration to India in 1970 of Lord Chaitanya's movement. We were just discussing that. He describes that as the restoration, that return to India in 1970, the restoration of Lord Chaitanya's movement in India. And he calls it rejuvenated and revitalized. The historical record gives moving testimony throughout to the devoted regard and painstaking fidelity with which Srila Prabhupada paid homage to the example of his own spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada's literary production illustrates this fidelity. In 1927, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had begun rehearsing for worldwide preaching by transforming Sajjana Toshini into The Harmonist, the English magazine The Harmonist. Following those footsteps, Srila Prabhupada began preparation for his own eventual entrance onto the world stage by starting up Back to Godhead in 1944. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur worked closely with Dr. Sanyal on a magisterial English language book, the projected three-volume Sri Krishna Chaitanya, to impress upon educated Europeans the loftiness and profundity of Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings. This work was considered so indispensable that the missionaries of 1933, Ban Maharaj and others, when they went to Europe to try to take Krishna consciousness to the foreign countries, they did not embark until copies of the first volume were in hand. 3 decades later, Srila Prabhupada did a similar thing, this time working virtually alone. He spent the years 1960 to 1965 in composing, fundraising, printing, publishing, and distributing the Bhagavatam first canto in 3 volumes. He did not embark from Calcutta until he had a steamer trunk filled with Bhagavatams to accompany him. Srila Prabhupada arrived in New York alone and destitute, yet he immediately began working to purchase a respectable property for a temple in Manhattan. The priority he gave this effort also replicates that of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who had directed a considerable but ultimately fruitless effort to establish an impressive temple in London. In this, as in many other instances, the record offers ample testimony as to how closely Srila Prabhupada was guided by the precedent contact of his spiritual master. There's a wonderful section on cooperation. Cooperation is very difficult in this age of Kali Yuga. Correct? Is this true? Even between close friends, sometimes cooperation, oftentimes friendship is broken up because of lack of ability to cooperate. Of course, we know that in terms of marriages, and in every case, relationships are very, very hard. So Rabindranath Prabhu writes, cooperation is the vital principle of all healthy social relationships, and it attains its highest application in divinity. The Lord is supremely personal, therefore he is supremely social. For his personhood becomes manifest only in relationships with other persons. In other words, we can't be personal and not have relationships. Personal means you have relationships. For that reason, as Prabhupada said many, many times, Krishna is never alone. On one occasion he noted, when we speak of Krishna, Krishna means Krishna with his devotees. The Lord's devotees even become integral to his own identity. Krishna's own names often illustrate this fact by including names of his intimate devotees, Yashodanandana, Ramanuja, Radharaman, and so on. Thus, the supremely absolute is at the same time supremely relative, entering into relationships with all varieties of individual devotees. So as Krishna is supremely absolute, he's also supremely relative. He's everything. He's absolute and relative. As a result, all these diversities become increasingly integrated into a more perfect union. In such a way, a transcendent relativity is manifest as a society of the utmost harmonious cooperation. And through the conduct of those relationships with the Lord and his associates, eternally increase in beauty, opulence, bliss, and knowledge. Salvation for a devotee means socialization into this highest society, being accepted, for example, into the company of the six Goswamis, or into that circle of gopis who may serve Rajamanjari or Lalita Sakhi. Damnation is the opposite, isolation and exclusion. We self-alienated, non-cooperative living entities, living here in exile, isolated in solitary confinement by the impervious walls of our egoism, are always summoned to return as fully integrated members of that transcendent society. Can everyone understand what we're reading? This sounds like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His language was quite difficult, but it's actually very brilliant writing. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu is one of the best writers in ISKCON, in my opinion. And he continues, Bhakti Yoga is the practice by which we become fit to rejoin that society in the spiritual world. By bhakti, we become increasingly integrated into the divine society, closer to Krishna and closer to his associates. And at the same time, we try to bring others with us. And this is the highest yoga. Srila Prabhupada said in 1968 in San Francisco, if you push on this movement of Krishna consciousness, then you'll be performing the highest type of yoga. Don't be misled by so-called yogas. Yoga means cooperation, cooperation with the Supreme. And Bhakti Yoga is the yoga of cooperation. Rabindra Sarup again, of all spiritual societies in this world, the Sankirtan movement most fully leads us into this transcendent cooperation. Since Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma in this age of quarrel, we will return to the kingdom of Krishna, not as isolated individuals, but all together. We will have another ISKCON there, wrote Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's founding of ISKCON was inevitable because of the failure of cooperation within the Gaudiya Math. The new but inevitable institution was meticulously crafted by Srila Prabhupada, who faithfully accepted the example of his spiritual master's own institution, by then hopelessly shattered. The incorporation of ISKCON in July 1966 proved to be only the first of a sequence of five crucial steps in the reconstitution of Lord Chaitanya's movement. In the summer of 1966, the bearer of the grand title, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, encompassed no more than a 70-year-old man, a run-down storefront, and a bag of ragtag kids. Yet the seed had been planted and would fructify. It took another 4 years or so for all the requisite elements to become manifest, so that ISKCON was made fit to become the fruition and fulfillment of the Gaudiya Math institution. So this is about a 120-page book, and it's due to be published hopefully by Gopranim time. I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We're also applauding applauding to Rabindra Sarup Prabhu for his brilliant work. Do you have any questions or comments? Can I show the video now? Any questions or comments? Yes. Okay. There's a microphone coming.
Also, he had the power to take us off the streets, bringing what wasn't in the Gaudiya mat, women in the temple to live, to train us, and everything. Mm. I'd really like your comment on this.
Yeah, well, Srila Prabhupada was the acharya, and he was able to make certain adjustments to enable the preaching to be more effective. And that was his genius also. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wasn't in that element. You know, he was in India. He didn't go overseas. But Srila Prabhupada did go overseas, and he made adjustments accordingly, according to the culture at the time. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada came, he asked his early disciples all kinds of questions about American life and how things worked in America. He also asked Sally Agarwal in Butler, Pennsylvania, all kinds of questions. So he was constantly studying the American mentality, you know, figuring out how to present Krishna consciousness in the most effective way. Is that okay?
That's
lovely.
Yeah.
So he made adjustments. He didn't change the principles or the philosophical understanding, but he made some cultural adjustments.
He was very brave. Even he got criticized by God brothers that why he has women in the temples and he's training them like that. And he was very, very brave.
Mm. So it was tremendously successful. And then when he brought his Westerners back to India, that was also another brilliant success story. Any other questions? So we're starting a new project on the life of Srila Prabhupada. The last major film on his life was in 30 years ago, entitled Your Ever Well Wisher. We also produced that film. Actually, we're starting a new film on the life of Srila Prabhupada for the public. We were asked to do such a film for the 50th anniversary of the founding of ISKCON, and also for the new temple in Mayapur. Thousands of people are coming every day, and it will only increase as the temple develops, the new temple. So we need a film to introduce the public to the glories of Srila Prabhupada's accomplishments. So we're embarking on a 2-year production of a film called Acharya, One Who Teaches by Example. And this is a brochure on the project. It will be a 90-minute film made for high-end television broadcasts. It could be played on any TV station in the world. And if you think about it, we actually want to release this on the day that Srila Prabhupada stepped foot in America. And because that is a very significant date. That is actually the beginning of the international preaching of Lord Chaitanya's movement. The day that Srila Prabhupada arrived in America. So that will set off a string of 50th anniversaries. September 2015, Prabhupada, came in 1965. That's 50 years later. That will set off a string of 50-year anniversaries for the next 12 years. The 50th anniversary of Prabhupada's going to Fiji. The 50th anniversary of Prabhupada's arrival in Sweden. The 50th anniversary of his establishing the temple in the manor, at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. You follow? 50th anniversaries for the next 12 years until his departure. 50th anniversary of his departure. So this film, we can actually take to any TV station in the world, these different countries that the 50th anniversary appears in, and they'll probably air it because it's a very significant date. 50th anniversary of anything, if you're around that long, it's significant, right? If we're married for 50 years, it's a big deal. So what to speak of Prabhupada's accomplishments? So we're very hopeful that this film will be seen by millions and millions of people starting from September 2015 for the next 12 years. So we're going to show you a short trailer on that film. Do we have audio? Prabhu, do we have audio?
Sri Siddhanta Saraswati Sati Sutta Priyati Krishna Sevaya Jara Chalena Se Se Mohanta Guru Jagate Amma Devru Krishna Bhakti Dehe Tai Tai Tada Icha Balavan Vashti Ete Tanta.
I was wandering in the street and some of the boys saw me and gradually they came to me.
To see an Indian man in Indian dress in a park on Tompkins Square with, you know, majority of the people were old Russian and Polish people. You know, it was just too far out.
When he moved down to Lower East Side, I thought that was a stroke of brilliant social judgment, because traditionally Swamis, Yogis, Zen masters all moved uptown to the rich.
And it was also the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, and it was also the beginning of a trend that grew towards the appreciation of Eastern religions in America.
Prabhupada had introduced something that all of the youth were really attracted to.
Krishna said, there's no time when we didn't exist, and there'll be no time when we cease to exist. The only thing that changes is the body. But the music really was the key that opened the door into the yoga and the yogic philosophy and the Vedic scriptures.
So I went and sat down and started chanting. And then when Prabhupada spoke, he said, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. And when he said that, I knew that I had found my spiritual master.
I'm not presenting a God, musical. I'm presenting the God who is recognized.
I thought, this is the man I've been looking for all my life. The principles that he taught me of humility, forgiveness, kindness, caring, are still there in my everyday existence.
I saw Srila Prabhupada when he was speaking. He just had such a sincere longing to reach people's hearts.
I felt so close to Prabhupada. I felt he's my well-wisher, he's my friend, he's my father.
Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnava.
Print as many books in as many languages and distribute throughout the whole world.
When Prabhupada saw that how these children were so hungry that they had to eat the things that people threw away and how they're fighting with the dogs to get these scraps of food. Tears swelled in his eyes and he said, "We have to see that nobody goes hungry within a 10-mile radius."
He fully supported freedom of religion.
God is one. God cannot be two. You may give him different names. That is different. But God is one.
So yeah, he made it very clear that, you know, in terms of politics, we're not interested in changing people's religion or taking over the government for one religion as opposed to another religion. We just would like to see that the leaders of human society are enlightened personalities, whatever religion they come from.
Srila Prabhupada is always so much untouched by praise. He gives the same message country after country, encourages each disciple.
I have no personal qualification, but I simply try to satisfy my guru. That's all.
He said, I never expected to do all this.
Thank you very much. If anyone's interested in more information about the film, we have brochures. You can see me afterwards. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.